Imagine you're just standing on a street corner, right? You're looking up at this, I don't know, like a 40-story skyscraper right in the middle of a historic neighborhood.
Right, which is usually exactly what people are fighting against.
Yeah, exactly. But instead of seeing this massive looming wall of steel and glass that's just blocking out the sun, you actually just see the clouds floating like right behind it.
That's like magic.
It totally does. But there are no giant digital screens. There are no, sci-fi cloaking devices drawing massive amounts of power off the grid. It
Yeah.
is just raw analog physics at work.
And that is really the holy grail of urban planning right now. Because, for decades, city planners and architects have treated urban density strictly as a height problem.
Right.
They argue endlessly over whether a new building should be 5 stories or 50 stories. But the research we're unpacking today argues that density is actually, it's a visual impact problem.
Which fundamentally changes how we approach the housing crisis. I mean, if you live in any major city, you know this battle intimately.
Oh, absolutely.
You have these beautiful century-old brick facades, mature oak trees, just undeniable neighborhood character. But rents are skyrocketing, right? And people desperately need high-density housing.
Yeah, they do.
So it always feels like the zero-sum game. Like either you freeze the neighborhood in amber or you build the housing and just completely destroy the aesthetic soul of the street. So for this deep dive, we are exploring a set of sources detailing this really wild architectural prototype called the occlusion needle.
An occlusion needle.
Yeah, and it's a highly specific sphere-based residential tower designed to solve this exact gridlock by literally hiding itself in plain sight.
And the premise here is just a phenomenal piece of design logic,
Yeah.
because the text points out that a much taller, thinner tower might actually preserve far more of the sky, more view corridors, and just more of the neighborhood's overall legibility than a short, fat apartment block.
Because the short fat block just fills up the whole street wall,
Right.
like from the
Yeah.
sidewalk to the roof line.
Exactly. A low, wide block creates a solid, opaque wall. But the occlusion needle takes the complete opposite approach. It combines a highly compact central core with radial floor plates, and then it wraps the entire structure in a passive optical relay facade.
Okay, let's unpack this because, I mean, when I first read the phrase optical relay facade in the source material, my mind went straight to like an LED invisibility cloak.
Yeah, a lot of people think of that, like giant TV screens.
Right. I was picturing millions of pixels projecting a live camera feed of the sky, but the text is really clear that digital screens are a terrible solution for
They're
this.
awful. They require just staggering amounts of electricity.
Yeah, and the pixel panels burn out and look awful eventually, and the software inevitably crashes.
Exactly. But this facade doesn't use a single line of code. There's literally no software to crash.
Which is crazy to think about.
It is. This is an intricate, fully analog optical network. It's made up of intake mirrors, relay plates, prisms, and output faces. So it relies entirely on the geometry of light. To understand the mechanism, just think about how light interacts with a conventional building. It hits the glass and either reflects the sun back at you, or it stops entirely, which is what creates a shadow.
Right.
The occlusion needle intercepts that light instead.
The sources actually use a really helpful analogy here to keep us from thinking about this as just, magic. They say the building behaves like a lateral periscope
A
array.
periscope, yeah, that's the
Oh.
perfect way to visualize it.
Yeah. Like if you think about a submarine periscope, right? It captures light from above the water, bounces it off an angled mirror, sends it down a tube, and bounces it off a second mirror into your eye.
Right.
The occlusion needle is doing exactly that, but horizontally and across a massive, massive scale. So selected panels on one side of the tower capture fragments of the actual sky or landscape from behind the building.
Yeah.
And then that light is channeled through the outer shell of the architecture and projected out of the viewer-facing surface on the other side.
And what's fascinating here is the concept of calibrated visual permeability.
Calibrated visual permeability. That's a mouthful.
It is, but it's crucial. Because the goal of this architecture isn't universal invisibility. You aren't going to look at this spot on the skyline and just see thin air.
Like Wonder Woman's jet.
Exactly. It's not an invisible jet. Instead, the architects are deliberately trying to make portions of the tower read as reflected background rather than a solid obstruction.
Okay, so let's ground this in a specific visual for the listener. If I'm a pedestrian and I'm standing at the corner of Fifth and Main looking up at this tower, I am not seeing a solid wall.
Right.
As my eyes scan up the structure, certain optical cells are basically feeding me a patch of the actual blue sky that exists directly behind the building.
That is the exact experience. And because our brains are incredibly efficient, well, they're hardwired pattern recognition machines. Really, we fill in the blanks.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, when we see fragments of the background sky that are continuous with the sky around the perimeter of the building, we perceive the structure as being far less massive than it actually is.
It tricks the brain.
Completely. The building actively allows you to look through its edges, optically speaking, and that preserves the visual legibility of the neighborhood. It creates this brilliant illusion of emptiness.
Okay, but for those optical panels to catch a photon of light on the north side, bounce it perfectly through the building's skin, and deliver it to my eye on the south side?
Yeah.
I mean, the building shape has to be perfectly engineered.
Oh, flawlessly
Seems like
engineered.
flat glass would just ruin the illusion. A flat curtain wall just bounces all light in one uniform direction. So the optical requirements of this periscope array force a complete reinvention of the skyscraper's physical skeleton.
Which is why the sources dictate that the geometry has to be entirely sphere-based.
Right, the sphere-based geometry.
Because the flat geometry of a standard skyscraper would completely defeat the purpose here. The occlusion needle is organized as a radial field.
Okay.
The text notes that the panel angles on the facade are tuned from what they call spherical normals.
Spherical normals, yeah.
So in geometry, a normal vector is a line pointing straight out from the center of a sphere, perfectly perpendicular to the surface.
Got it.
Every single optical cell on this building is tilted and angled based on that spherical geometry. So it's pointing toward a specific source of light, a dedicated internal relay path, and a specific viewing zone down on the street.
Which suddenly makes the stakes of those design simulations make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
The sources list all these intense simulations required for approval. Things like glare, heat reflection, massing.
Yeah, because if you get it wrong.
If you get the geometry of curved glass wrong, you aren't just making an ugly building, you are making a dangerous one.
Very dangerous.
We saw this in London, right? With the walkie-talkie building.
Yes, the infamous walkie-talkie building.
Yeah, the architects used a concave glass facade that accidentally acted as a giant parabolic reflector. It literally focused the sun's rays into a solar death ray that melted the plastic off cars parked on the street below.
Melted mirrors, blistered paint. It was a disaster. And that is a perfect real-world example of why getting the spherical normals right is a matter of public safety. It's not just aesthetics.
Right.
If you are building a massive three-dimensional lens in the middle of a city, the thermal and glare simulations just have to be flawless. It has to diffuse heat while relaying light.
Makes sense.
And this demanding radial geometry doesn't just dictate the exterior skin.
Yeah.
You know, it fundamentally shapes how people actually live inside the building.
Right. So let's talk about the physical structure and what the sources call the section and axis, because this isn't a straight cylinder. It looks more like a, well, a highly engineered tapering needle.
Hence the name.
Exactly. So the lower levels feature a wider occupied ring. They carry more apartment units, which makes sense because you're nestled down within the dense urban canopy of the surrounding
Right.
buildings.
You don't need the optical illusion as much down there.
Exactly. But as the tower rises into the skyline, it dramatically tapers. So the upper levels have far fewer units, but they get these massive panoramic view exposures.
It really creates a very elegant massing strategy. You have a central service core holding all the elevators and utilities, but the most striking internal design choice, at least to me, is the exterior spiral circulation.
Oh man, the exterior spiral.
Yeah, the staircases and the access balconies don't sit inside the building. They actually wrap around the outside of the tower in this continuous spiral.
Okay, here is where I have to pause and just inject a little reality into this. Because the idea of exterior stairs wrapping around a 40-story skyscraper sounds majestic in a rendering.
Sure.
But a tension mesh keeping me from falling doesn't exactly reassure me against the elements. I mean, at 40 stories up, we're talking about serious wind shear.
It gets extremely windy.
Right, I just cannot imagine a resident wanting to walk their dog or like carry groceries to their apartment on a freezing, icy January morning, completely exposed to the wind. Mesh or no mesh, that sounds completely miserable.
It's a highly practical concern. And the engineering actually addresses it through what the text calls a spiral safety envelope.
A safety envelope.
Yeah. So the fine-gauge stainless tension mesh isn't just a physical barrier to keep you from falling off the edge. It's designed with aerodynamic baffling.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the weave of the mesh itself disrupts shear winds. It dramatically reduces the wind load on the people walking along the spiral while still preserving that crucial visual permeability we talked about.
Oh, I see. So it basically acts as a windbreak without turning into a solid, opaque wall that would ruin the optical illusion from the street.
Precisely. And it also incorporates bird-safe fritting.
Fritting?
Yeah, fritting is this subtle baked-in pattern on the mesh or the glass that birds can visually register. It prevents them from colliding with the structure at high speeds.
That's actually really smart.
So residents, visitors, pets, and, you know, urban wildlife are all protected.
Okay, that makes the exterior circulation much more believable. Because usually, in a high-rise, the stairwell is just this miserable, windowless concrete tube shoved into the dark center of the building.
Right. It's just treated as a hidden service zone.
Yeah. A total afterthought. But the occlusion needle turns that vertical circulation into a real feature. The spiral landings act as pause points. The text says they serve as partial public overlooks and personalized thresholds leading into the internal apartments.
Mm.
It describes it as turning a simple stairwell into a civic viewing sequence.
I love that phrase. It acknowledges a fundamental architectural truth, which is that when you build up, you are taking a piece of the sky away from the public.
That's very true.
And you should give some of that view back to the inhabitants in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
They also carefully considered the visual impact of this spiral at night. Because think about it, if you have people walking up and down an exterior staircase, standard building code would usually demand flooding it with bright, harsh security lights.
Oh, yeah. Which would instantly turn the building into this glowing, obnoxious skyline object. It would completely ruin the historic district at night, basically undoing all the work the optical panels did during the day.
Exactly. So to solve that, the prototype utilizes low-intensity amber path lighting. And it's motion activated at the landings and thresholds.
Nice.
It provides total safety for night circulation, but it does it without creating light pollution or turning the building into a neighborhood eyesore.
It really is an incredibly elegant system. I mean, we've solved the visual obstruction during the day with the analog optics. We've managed the lighting at night. We've figured out how people move safely and beautifully through the structure.
We have.
But if you are building high-density residential housing in any modern city, you have to deal with the most stubborn, space-hogging piece of infrastructure known to man.
The parking garage.
The parking garage.
Yeah, this is often where ambitious architectural projects completely fall apart because traditional underground garages are massively inefficient.
They take up so much space.
Think about the geometry of a standard parking structure. You have to account for wide driving aisles just so cars have room to back out.
Yeah.
You need long sweeping ramps to transition between the floors.
Yeah.
And the sheer excavation volume required just to hold the empty air that cars drive through is staggering.
Exactly. You end up digging a giant crater in the middle of a historic district, disrupting foundations and city utilities, all just so, like, a Honda Civic has room to make a three-point turn underground.
Right.
And the structural spans required to hold up a massive skyscraper over that empty driving field are enormous. But the occlusion needle solves this with a turntable parking elevator.
Yes.
When I was reading this section, I was really trying to map out the mechanical sequence. From what I gather, you drive into a bay, and the floor itself acts as the valet. It's essentially a vertical train roundhouse or like an automated vending machine for cars.
Those are highly accurate ways to visualize it. The building completely eliminates the traditional driving field. It concentrates all the turning movement at one central elevator turntable, rather than asking every single car to navigate a concrete maze.
Okay, let me see if I've mapped this mechanical sequence out correctly. So you're a resident coming home. You pull off the street into a designated placement bay. You park straight ahead, turn off the engine, and step out.
Yep.
The floor you parked on is actually a circular elevator platform. The automated system drops the platform down into the radial core, and once it reaches your assigned parking level, the platform acts as a turntable, and it rotates to a specific mathematical angle.
Exactly.
A gate opens, and the system mechanically pushes your car forward into a fixed, private radial garage pod.
That's right.
And then to leave, I guess the process just reverses, the turntable retrieves your car, rotates it to face the exit, and brings you up to the street so you can drive straight out without ever having to back up. It's like a giant Lazy Susan crossed with a high-tech Batman gadget.
Yeah, you have the sequence exactly right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, Eliminating that conventional maneuvering space fundamentally changes the engineering reality of the whole tower.
Oh, so?
Well, you don't need giant concrete structural spans because there is no open driving aisle. Yeah. You drastically reduce the excavation depth. The text even points out that because this system is so compact, you could build short lateral drives to feed this turntable from entirely under an adjacent parcel, assuming you secured the excavation rights.
Okay, but here is my major pushback on the whole vending machine concept. What happens when the vending machine breaks? Because we are trading spatial problems for mechanical ones. If that turntable motor dies on a Tuesday morning, you have 50 residents who are suddenly trapped and very, very late for work.
Right.
So how do they handle failure recovery?
That is the critical pivot in the design challenge here. The concern completely shifts away from, you know, drivers scraping their bumpers on concrete pillars, and it rests entirely on throughput and redundancy. To handle a mechanical failure, the text implies layers of engineering safeguards. For instance, if the primary electrical turntable motor fails, a system like this requires redundant, gravity-fed hydraulic overrides.
Oh, gravity-fed.
Yeah, this allows maintenance to manually rotate the platform to the exit vector and retrieve vehicles even during a total power loss.
Okay, that makes me feel a little better. But what about safety? Without open driving lanes, how do firefighters access a burning car or, you know, how do you even vent the car exhaust?
Surprisingly, the radial geometry actually assists with this. Because all the pods circle a central elevator shaft, that open throat acts like a massive chimney.
Oh, the chimney effect.
Exactly. Ventilation systems pull exhaust and potential smoke straight up and out of the building far more efficiently than a sprawling, flat underground garage ever could.
That makes a lot of sense.
And for fire access, the design includes a brilliant feature the sources call garage pod access.
Right. Here's where it gets really interesting to me. Because these aren't just open parking stalls looking into a dark elevator shaft. Because the building is a radial shape, the parking pods form a continuous ring.
Yes.
And running along the outside perimeter of that room is a pedestrian hallway. So as an owner, you have a dedicated locking pedestrian door that leads directly from that hallway into the back of your specific garage pod.
That separation is a massive win for safety and usability. It completely isolates foot traffic from the moving machinery.
It's so smart.
Residents can use their pod for storage, for charging an electric vehicle, or just to grab groceries out of the trunk without ever stepping foot inside the elevator throat where the turntable is operating.
Wow.
And emergency personnel can use that exact same perimeter hallway to access any individual pod without needing the turntable to function at all. It transforms the parking level from an industrial concrete cavern into a ring of private, assigned rooms around a shared mechanical core.
So, assuming all of this engineering holds up, you know, the redundant hydraulics, the wind-baffled staircases, the flawless spherical optics, everything we've talked about points back to the ultimate mission stated in the sources, which is historic district use.
Right. This is not a concept designed for a wide-open suburban field. It is explicitly intended as a prototype to be deployed and studied against the incredibly strict design guidelines of historic preservation overlay zones.
The toughest places to build.
Absolutely. These are the highly protected neighborhoods where city planners are basically tearing their hair out, trying to figure out how to add vital housing density without erasing the historic streetscape.
And the sources make it very clear that a concept like this wouldn't just get rubber stamped by a zoning board. Its compatibility would have to be relentlessly proven.
Over and over again.
We mentioned the thermal glare tests earlier, but they also require massive public viewpoint simulations to prove the optical trick actually works from the sidewalk. They have to literally simulate the street level experience to guarantee the periscope array is capturing the right fragments of the sky.
They do.
So what does this all mean? For you, the listener, walking down your own city streets, it means that the war between preservation and progress doesn't actually have to be a zero-sum game.
No, it doesn't.
The occlusion needle proves that with enough architectural imagination, really rigorous engineering, and some heavy-duty analog physics, we can actually build the high-density housing our cities desperately need.
Yeah.
And we can do it while actively respecting and visually preserving the aesthetic past of our neighborhoods. We don't have to choose between housing people and having beautiful skylines.
It is a deeply optimistic vision for the future of our urban centers. However, this raises an important question, one that goes far beyond the mechanics of prisms, tension meshes, and turntables.
Okay, what's that?
Well, we established earlier that this analog optical network doesn't make the building magically disappear. It preserves selected view corridors.
Right.
It captures and relays highly specific fragments of the sky or the landscape or the historic brick facades across the street. But if our architecture begins functioning as a selective analog lens, who gets to decide which views are selected to be preserved?
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that. That is a really fascinating point.
Because as our buildings evolve from passive structures of brick and glass into these active optical machines that curate and reflect the visual reality of the streetscape back to us, the building itself becomes an editor of the city's identity.
It's curating reality.
Exactly. It chooses what we see and, by extension, what we ignore. It forces us to ask a rather profound question. When we build these magnificent optical illusions to protect the character of a neighborhood, is the history we are fighting so hard to preserve the actual living city? Or are we just building a highly curated, mirrored illusion of it?
That is an incredible thought to leave on. The next time you find yourself frustrated by that familiar neighborhood battle over a new high-rise, and you're standing on a historic street corner looking up at the sky, ask yourself what exactly you were trying to preserve and whether a trick of the light might just be the answer we've been looking for.